The 2011 draft is the proof that you do not need and you should not overreach for a quarterback. Don't do that. And in fact, of course, Cam Newton would have gone to Denver.
Cam, keep it on, man. Good luck to you, man. Yes, stay healthy. Okay.
But that's just the start of it, fellas, because the torch would have been passed all over the world of pro football that year.
Hey, wait a second. You need help? Steve.
I brought some visual aids here to make my point for you. Andrew Luck is now living in Football America in Charlotte, North Carolina. So instead, Cam is going to land in Denver here. I can't see him, but he's here. That means that there's no room now for Peyton Manning. Right. Don't look confused by it, Peyton. No room for you in Denver, no matter. There's a spot open now with Matt Hasselbeck moving on up in Seattle.
Move to Seattle.
With Peyton Manning in Seattle and presumably winning a Lombardi at least that Russell Wilson won when he was there. Now, he's not going to wind up in Seattle. Where's he going to go? Who was rumored to be taking him in the third round if Seattle didn't? The Philadelphia Eagles. So now Russell Wilson lands in Philadelphia. There's no room for Carson Wentz there. Where's Carson Wentz go? I'll leave that to you. I'm out of gas.
David. Football David. The Dave Dameshek Football Program, available on Apple Podcasts and at NFL.com/DDFP. Now here's your host, Dave Dameshek.
There you hear it, a little snippet from the NFL What If. I encourage you, Nate, the man, that you track it down on YouTube. Brian Baldinger, Daniel Jeremiah, Cindy Freeland, Steve Weiss, Jim Trotter, co-write, and your pal Dave Dameshek. Asking those all-important questions about iconic moments from pro football's history to see what would happen if we reversed the result of those. Go and check it out. Do your old pal Dave a favor there. And hi and hello and welcome to the Dave Dameshek Football Program. I hope all's well in yet another week, month, year of sequestration. I don't know where we are just yet, but we're here to kibitz about the game of pro football and the game of life with our pals here. Let's start it off with the voice of your Los Angeles Chargers. He looks downright SoCal-y circa 1994. Is that Tim Salmon working one of the corner infield spots for the then Anaheim Angels? I don't know, but the shades say is. Or is that the Terminator? Let's get to the bottom of it. I think it is, in fact, our pal Matt Money Smith. What's the poop, fella?
Oh, I just got my battle vision glasses in the mail from the As Seen on TV. If you notice, because I think advertising is down a little bit in the world of television, some of the more interesting commercials are being run. And one of those happens to be the advertisement for these fine battle vision glasses designed in a NASA laboratory for fighter pilots. And because I have always longed to be a fighter pilot, but alas, my less than 20/20 vision is all that stood in my way, not my overwhelming cowardice in the face of adversity. But I figured at least I could somewhat live my dream by simply sporting these, lifting my head up a little bit and jutting out my bottom jaw so it looks like it's more square and powerful than it really is. How does it look?
It looks great. Hey, Money, with those glasses, do you get anything else for free? You know, sometimes with those kind of ads, if you get
glasses,
you can buy, you get something. Ooh, another
second pair. And then just in case I go out at night, battle vision, night vision.
Yes.
All for the low, low price of $29.95 plus shipping and handling, which was like $60.
You don't work your spots in on this show. What are you talking about? Do that on your own time. Do that on Petros and Money or
I'm not
somewhere
paid.
Else.
I'm not
do that
a paid
from the
endorser.
Broadcast booth when you're watching the Chargers host the Rams. Ooh, we'll talk about the Rams and their new getups in just a second. First, though, let's say hello to our resident Miami Dolphins fan all the way from London, England, surely over the moon, that Tua is now officially a member of his Miami Dolphins. He's signed, sealed, and delivered. It's Handsome Hank. How are you, Handsome?
Hi, Dave. I'm very good. You're right. Yes, Tua or Wana, as I call him now, because he is sporting the number one. Should I stick with that? Or
why? I don't get it either. It makes
Why not two? Well, but yeah, apparently the punter was wearing number two. Not that he's going to need to.
Can't
to,
take it from him.
They could cut the punter anyway, because they're not going to be needing him now that Tua is on the team. I'm excited. We're
still the best. still the one of the great surprises of the last decade for me in talking to pro football players was Matt Ryan telling me that he chose the number two as an homage to his favorite quarterback when he was growing up, Tim Couch. Very rarely do you get, as a human being, do you get to outstrip your idol in terms of deeds? And Matt Ryan has actually exceeded his boyhood hero, Tim Couch. How many people can really say that they did better than their idol did? Also, let's say hello to our pal. Big news since last week, Kibitzed here on the DDFP. As it turns out, the first Monday Night Football game of the season, I don't know who's going to be in the broadcast booth, but I know who's going to be on the field. It's his New York Football Giants against my Pittsburgh Steelers. How say you, Eddie Spaghetti? Ooh.
I'm looking forward to that game. The Giants have a lot of really good games this year. Unfortunately.
You're looking forward to that game. You're looking forward to that. I'm looking forward to any game played by people. I don't even have to be people. They could be our pets. They could be robots. I don't care.
Well, robots. Yeah, the Giants are coming to L.A. Week 4, I think. So, I mean, I'm not sure if fans will be near that stadium, but it's unfortunate for me because I'd be there. But, Giants get the Steelers, Giants get the Ravens, Giants get the Cardinals. A lot of really big matches looking forward to. But, you know, fingers crossed for football.
Spaghetti, you're wearing a garish, and especially garish tank top today.
So much to
explain
Prince.
Because everybody's just listening to us. But what gives here?
It's the Minnesota Timberwolves Purple Rain jerseys, Carl Anthony Towns. So it's,
where does one actually find that jersey?
I have a site, like a Chinese wholesale site, that right now the orders are definitely on like back order, but they're like $15. I order a bunch. I wear them
buying bootleg merchandise. Bootleg non-licensed merchandise is what you're doing here. Just helping to finance the Chinese underground. Is that what you're doing? Thanks. So you know what? You're responsible for COVID-19. I hope you're
I think I at the very least, I hope you have the dignity to have on the back of that jersey the number 19. That's what it should have on there. C19.
Right. No, 32.
Spaghetti. Well, it does bring up something that has been floating around on social media this week, which is the question. I'm not even sure. It was somebody significant. Hank Azaria. That's right. So if you love your Simpsons, you know Hank Azaria. He said he floated the idea, Rolling Stones, Beatles, Led Zeppelin is the debate, best band of all time, all British, of course. What's the best American band? It's kind of weird. It's a little bit like asking the question that we've debated here previously. Who's the third best wide receiver in NFL history? Randy Moss and Jerry Rice are surely the top two. But after that, it gets very weird to try and figure out who number three is. The best American band, it's a pretty unimpressive list. I mean, I'm not saying there aren't great bands, but it's weird that there's not one that you would say rightly rivals any of the three I just named there, whether it's Zeppelin, Rolling Stones, or the Beatles. Let's start with you, former music executive Matt Money Smith. Best band in American history?
Well, is it rock band?
Rock band.
So it's got to be rock. Yes. So it can't be like indie rock or hardcore or punk rock. It's like rock and roll. Is that what we're talking about?
I don't know. I think you got to expand it to that. I don't think you can go John Coltrane,
I'm not saying like jazz. Are the Ramones in that conversation? Is Metallica in that conversation? Or is it like, hey, it's Eagles, CCR, Tom Petty? Is it like classic rock? Like, that's what I don't understand. What is the question?
I guess.
I know I'm being a jerk, but I don't know.
You are being a jerk, buddy. You're right.
I think I can help. If it's rock band, I probably go, can I go Beach Boys? Like, I'd probably go Beach Boys. I think Beach Boys would probably be my submission. Beach Boys or maybe CCR. I think those two work. I think Metallica, from a technical standpoint, in terms of musicianship, is in the conversation. I don't know. I guess just kind of off the top of my head, that's what I would. But then, selfishly, I'd want to put the Grateful Dead in there. Just for wealth of catalog, difference of sound, the ability to incorporate jazz, blues, rock, multiple singers, the idea of the drum solo in space, in terms of drums in space, like that would be in the conversation for me as well. I know that was a very long answer to a very simple question, so my apologies. But
No, not at all.
I'm thinking about it in the moment. I didn't think about this.
All right. I'm sorry. I didn't send out a prep sheet for music talk here. But yeah, that was a great answer you just provided there. And feel free to jump in with more. One person I know who's chomping at the bit to get in on this is Eddie Spaghetti there. So far, no mention of who he wants to hear. What? No, what?
But my answer's not going to be what you think. I'm not going to even go there. I think to clarify what money was.
How could it not be, Eddie?
It better not be.
We had about this
because
that it was more important than sports.
Because Hank Azaria in the thread said that like Bruce and Tom Petty don't count towards this because it's more, they're more of like a one person with like a backing band thing. It wasn't a collaborative group effort with writing the songs and such. Although I do think the E Street Band has a lot of talented musicians, but that's a different story. So you can't put Dylan and Petty and Bruce. The Beach Boys and the Dead were my
What an arbitrary line to draw in the sand. Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers, Huey Lewis and the News. Not that I'm volunteering them for this for the short list here, but they're bands, aren't they? I mean, I. By the way, as I've said many times before, I don't understand how you get the vanity required to be like, yeah, this is all of us. This is our whole traveling band. We'll go on the year on tour for years, decades, at great length as a collective. But we are going to call it the Dave Matthews Band. Like, who signs up for that band? Like, no, we got to come up with a cool name that isn't Dave. Wait, imagine how obnoxious. Wait a minute, the Dave Damage.
The Dave Damage Football Program.
Okay, yeah. Bitten by my own snake. However, the most obnoxious deed I would submit is that we have the miracle of three chipmunks, three rodents with the ability to sing and harmonize and everything else. And one has the gall to be like, oh, yeah, but I'm the front man. I deserve specific shout out, Alvin. The other two, you're just chipmunks. But Alvin, I get the shout out. Obnoxious. Yes, handsome.
Yes, I agree. I mean, they're all talking chipmunks in the end. Everyone deserves some credit. I don't even know what the other guys are named.
Self-esteem issues is what they have.
Simon and Theodore.
You're better than
don't
that.
Care about them. That's not
you
true.
You are they better than that, them. Hank. It is an American that. Institution.
What goes on in the background of the other? But what's wrong with the other two? What, right. Are they that down on themselves? Are they that unimpressed? Like, yeah, you know, fair's fair. I mean, yeah, it's absolutely by the laws of nature, a downright miracle that we all three can sing, but Alvin's just that much better. So yeah, let's let him get top billing.
The singing isn't, they can talk, Dave. The most impressive thing is that they are talking chipmunks. Then singing.
All right, we'll debate that, which is more impressive. Yeah, I guess
well
so.
Done, Hank. Well,
I guess
done.
So.
You know, the fact that they Touché. Can communicate with humans in our own language.
Exactly.
By the way, Hank, if you would be so inclined to weigh in on the Hank Azaria Twitter thread, do you find it at all offensive? Because I do. I mean, I just rejected it immediately out of hand when he didn't put Queen in there. Queen's better than any of those bands anyway. So it's like, how do you come up with that and not include Queen, which pretty much every musician would say is the best of the bunch. They were the band's band, if you would ever ask musicians themselves.
Yeah, I think Queen is in the mix. I'm a personal fan of Radiohead, who I think you could throw in there as well. So I think America probably, you know, maybe falls outside of the top five at least when it comes to it. But it's hard to put those in any specific order. But I enjoy all of their music. For an American band, can I submit? And this is maybe just me because I grew up listening to a lot of this in the car with my parents. But Fleetwood Mac, always Love. been a fan of them, and I'd put them in the mix for great American bands.
That was one.
That's
of my
a
five.
Great call that I didn't think of them, actually. Yeah, and I'm with you on Radiohead, and I think their library of work now puts them into it. People typically say, you know, audiophiles like Money, who are, you know, who know the history and everything else, seem to put the Clash way up there. London Calling seems like it's always in the top two or three greatest records of all time when people make such lists. I mean, I don't know that their body of work would require it. Also, the Kinks, too. We talked about them recently. But that's British. I would say, since no one asked me, I am going to go Alvin and the Chipmunks one. No, I'm going to go – they count as American, right? Or do they just belong to
they're from the Woodlands. Sure. The Woodlands.
I will say it's weird what's become of REM. They've become when did things turn against them? You know? It's strange. They were uber hip money. You remember that. You're a little younger than I am, but roundabout, you know, Life's Rich Pageant, then Document, and then people were kind of down on Green, but then they bounced back with Out of Time and Automatic for the People. These are all great records, and the ones that preceded those are all great. Then they get sideways, as far as I'm concerned, with a little bit too much Precious Ukulele for my ears, or Mandolin or whatever, but not ukulele. But REM somehow, people, the cools of the 21st century have turned against them. Is this my perception or reality,
Mike? No, I think it's the old Billy Joel line, right? I hope I die before I get old. You know, I mean, I think that you get old and it's harder to write your sixth and your seventh and your eighth album and A, still be relevant, and B, still make great music. It's hard to do. I mean, heck, look at the Eagles, right? Did you ever hear their single from whatever, the Hell Freezes Over tour, Get Over It? It's one of the worst songs I've ever heard. It's absolutely horrible. Like, not only is it just not a good Eagles song, it's a terrible, terrible song. I don't know what happens to bands. It is very odd. Same thing with the Stones, you know, and when they were going back out on tour, my gosh, some of those records they're just terrible. Look at Pearl Jam.
It is terrible. Crazy. It is.
I had to get it in. So, no, it's not true. So I'm not going to give you a bite.
Oh, God.
I know it's not true.
You're not going to get me to take the bait. It's not true, you bum. But you're not going to get me to take the bait.
I feel that, yes, that's also true. I always find that specious logic that it's like, hey, that guy was in the writer's room on Seinfeld. Let's give him $5 million to develop another sitcom. It's like, are you sure that maybe everybody or a lot of people don't just have one really good idea and nothing behind it? Isn't that what they say about albums? The second album is the hardest one, or is it the second novel is the hardest one to write?
You get your whole life to write the first, and no one's going to call me on saying Billy Joel, right? I hope I die before I get old, instead of The Who, by the way. I screwed that one up.
I was going to say The Who.
Only the good die young. Jump in. Save me.
I was going to work myself back to that, but yes, yeah. We also in our great bands of British origin. Yeah, we left off The Who. Man, oh man, that's disgraceful for America. I don't know why I'm so late to the party on this one, but we should as a nation be ashamed of ourselves. The UK is relatively small in comparison, and yet they've turned out way more high-end classic bands.
Art across the board. Let's be honest. The UK is a juggernaut compared to the US.
Well, I mean, look, jazz is infinitely superior to rock and roll, so on that front it's not even close. America destroys the UK. So when you're talking about rock and roll being a derivative of jazz and blues, it's all derivative of American artists. So you can have your bastardization of our really one true American invention. Jazz music is American, born, raised, bred, spread across the world, specifically to Europe, when all those musicians had to go to Paris because they were no longer appreciated here, and kind of reestablished jazz over there. And then that then birthed kind of this rock and roll movement, the British invasion, that was all from American artists. So it's nice. It's cute Hank, but don't forget.
Right, but the artists had to go to Europe to be appreciated, to then be appreciated.
No, that's not true. They were appreciated here.
Because the American mass,
they had moved on.
Had no culture. Had no appreciation of culture.
No, Hank, don't, come on. We're not going to do this. Come on. I mean, it was appreciated. It then gave birth to Elvis Presley, and rock and roll started, coming into fashion. And obviously before Elvis, you're talking about all the blues musicians that he stole his music from.
I was just going to say, money, isn't that where it starts? Again, from our shores come the blues, Robert Johnson et al. Mm-hmm. Then the British take that and run with it in the 60s at some point. So really, it is our creation. Yeah. Rock and roll, the British invasion, is a sandwich between our blues and our jazz. It's really kind of the big payback for 250 years ago. Everything in the U.S. starts over there, and ever since, you guys take our scraps. Like punk, too.
Right.
You know, punk also. We come up with punk, then for some, I don't know why. I mean, that's a little, that should make Americans red in the face a little bit, that they vibed more to the Clash and the Sex Pistols than they did the Ramones, if my punk history is accurate there, Mike.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, the thing about the Clash, and like one of the reasons why I think they get in this conversation, is kind of the way that they amalgamated all these different genres, specifically, you know, a lot of reggae. And you think about the, like, that's what's weird about the UK, is like they have a vibrant, like, legitimate reggae scene. It's really good and really strong. And I think one of the great things about the Clash is they kind of took rock and punk and reggae and sort of put it into this pot. And it really inspired a lot of great artists in each of those genres, right? To kind of grow out of that, the trunk of that tree. Now I sound like a complete douche. I need to stop.
No, I'll tell you this.
We're in the
this
I'll sound pretentious too.
There we go.
You look like a complete douche as well.
Yeah, exactly.
He looks like, yeah, he looks like
we just talk about those stupid Rams uniforms already. My God.
With right said Fred, he just stepped off. He just did 90 exactly. minutes on stage, and now he's going to hip us to what's going down in the music scene. He's got to run, though. Kurt Loder's waiting to talk to him for more info. That's
embarrassing. Embarrassing. Edit all that out, Spaghetti. God, that was terrible.
No, I'll tell you this. Here's a hipster take from Vain Dave. Bob Marley and all reggae, it's kind of like, by the time the mainstream sinks its teeth into it, Legend is great listen, you know, breezy summertime music and chill out music and so on. But the dance hall stuff is the best. I mean, that before Bob Marley really makes it big, that's the grandest sound of Marley that there is. Yes, Handsome?
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, I'm a huge reggae fan. So, you know, from the start of the, you know, ska before that, and then all the way through the Rocksteady era and Marley and everyone else. So, huge fan.
All right. I just wanted to see if we could figure it out there. Oh, by the way, yeah, another one that we're leaving out is James Brown, right?
Yeah. I mean, but again, like, I think what happens is we get into, you know, I was just being a jerk to Hank there. He's, you know, look, the British invasion was kind of the most meaningful sort of moment of rock and roll. You know, if you could, well, you can argue. But then again, it's like, is Elvis Presley rock and roll? It's such a stupid argument. I don't know what the hell to say. You know, Fleetwood Mac,
I don't know.
CPR, take your pick. You know, they're all great. Everybody's right in these conversations. Whatever.
Exactly.
All right. You want to? Okay, fine. Money, have it your way. Let's pour through the Jacksonville Jaguars
except for Pearl
schedule
Jam.
And see how many wins they're gonna have. Yeah. Now, Spaghetti, you're not gonna make. I'm sorry. Yeah, I kind of moved on there too quickly. I wanted to get your thoughts here. My assumption is you're going veteran, the boys.
No. If Bruce is a legitimate pick, if it's considered a rock band because of the E Street Band, I'm going to pick Bruce. But I know Hank Azaria in that thread said like Bruce and Petty don't really count because he doesn't say it wasn't like as collaborative as
whatever Hank,
like Zeppelin.
I don't think that makes no sense. You know, Bruce is rock and roll. Dylan's rock and roll. Prince is rock and roll. By the way, I might put Prince in there.
Well, that's where I started this whole conversation was when I saw Spaghetti's jersey there and forgot to include it. Yeah. Yes.
That's a contender that might be able to knock off. You might have a shot at knocking off one of those big four with Prince if you really get into the catalog and think about it.
Here's the thing I'll say. The thing is, it's a little bit for me. I this is obviously my personal experience. I can't speak for anybody, but same thing with Rush. I get it, you know, or it's also like. What was her name? The woman who is the universally. No. I was trying to make an analogy with physical beauty. The woman who she was
Aphrodite.
The Italian woman. No, the Italian
Isabella
woman.
Rossellini.
Isabella Rossellini. Thank you for saving me. That would have taken 9 minutes at least for me to figure that one out. And no, I would not have moved on until we solved it as a group. Yes, everybody holds her up. I can understand that aesthetically she's attractive, but she's not attractive to me. Rush, I get it. Technically, oh, you listen. So Neil Peart, oh, you got to like, nah, it doesn't do anything for me. It doesn't hit me in the gut, so I don't care about that. And that's Prince does hit me in the gut, but I don't find myself ever. It's kind of like donuts. I like them, like we talked about last week. I like Prince, but I don't find myself listening to him more than once or twice a year. Mm. Am I wrong about that? Do you sit around listening to Prince records?
I would just kind of go back to your initial band that you brought up. Like if you told me I could have the REM catalog or the Prince catalog, it takes me less than a second to just grab that giant stack of Prince records and go really? With that. Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. Like the early stuff, it's fantastic. You know, even before, you know, 1999 or Purple Rain, or, you know, you're talking about 3-4 albums that just technically he's great. He's a brilliant songwriter. But again, I don't know, like what do you have to have a, I'm stopping. You know, do you need
to talk about something?
I just
that
feel
you
like
know
I'm preaching. I don't want it to sound like that. You know what I mean? Like, do you have to have hits? Like, does it have to be popular? Is that like part of the criteria? Like, oh, you can't really kind of get into, if we start getting into deep tracks, then people are going to come with, oh, Guided by Voices or something like that. Or like, do you have to have some sort of stronghold in popular culture? Like at one point you had to be one of the 3 or 4 most popular bands in your country or in the world. Cause that, I think that's kind of an important part of it, right? That you were able to appeal to the masses and not just write really cool, critically acclaimed, you know, music, but have that special gift of writing hooks and writing songs that people want to listen to 60 years after they've been written. I think that probably has to come into the conversation as well.
Sounds a bit like the Hall of Fame argument. Not just, you know, it's got to be stats and wins and longevity, you know, everything, the combination of things.
Well, I guess it comes down to all things that have to do with taste. It's a little bit like the old George Carlin joke of something about how people drive. Like if people drive faster than you, they're jerks. And if they drive slower than you, they're a-holes kind of thing. It's like my taste is just right. Yes, it respects technical proficiency and the history, but it also moves you, you know, it also hits you in the gut a little bit. And then I bemoan people who are too into Dave Matthews Band, you know, kind of thing. Like that's beneath the standard there. Spaghetti. So you're not going to try to make a case here for Pearl Jam, because some of your pals on the social media jumped on me when I mentioned a couple of options there.
No,
how can you not go better?
I read through the Hank Azaria thread and they were mentioned enough, so I'm not going to go to bat for them. I think my answer really would be Bruce. I saw Bruce play 4 hours and 12 minutes once. I mean, in terms of like his catalog and his mass appeal and his like live show, I mean, that's really, to me, those are the most important things. And it's there's no other live show like it. I've seen 75-year-old men dance in the GA pit. to me, he's incredible. And, I could listen to pretty much any of his albums from back to front. And I think he is the answer if he is qualified.
I feel that I've never seen Bruce Springsteen, but I know myself well enough to know that I think I would get bored.
No.
I mean, how about like, all right, I like the music. How about 4 hours? How much?
Awesome.
I mean, like that's way more than a football game.
The whole crowd danced.
Yeah, let's wrap it up here.
The giant party. I'm telling you, like it was awesome. It was amazing. I was at MetLife Stadium. It was great. Actually, speaking of Purple Rain, I saw him once in Barclays when he opened up with Purple Rain when Prince passed. And I remember that show specifically because me and my dad stole boxes of popcorn, ate the popcorn. And then there was a sushi table that we just took a handfuls of sushi and threw them in the popcorn box. And as the show is starting, this is from the 40-40 club inside Barclays. We ran back to our seats, like in the last row during the River Tour. Not the original River Tour, the one.
And we go down to the river.
That was one of the best.
To the river we go.
Him opening up with Purple Rain, the whole crowd's purple.
I've never danced so hard to a song about death, despair, and poverty. Let's go. Let's get after it.
Well, that tour was amazing. Anyway, like I'm saying, he opened up with Purple Rain. We're eating sushi out of a popcorn box. It was incredible. Me and my dad had a great time.
I had the occasion a few months ago to go on a Twister, daytime Twister with the Spaghettis and with Jada. It was a grand time. Nice. to get to see Staten Island zoned and hear the origin story of our superhero Spaghetti. Quickly, Spaghetti, how was the birthday?
I had some great food this week, and I went and got some brisket down in Huntington Park at Ray's Texas Barbecue. His story is great. If you ever have a chance to go over there and drive, and I, you know what, drive now, because driving around LA has been awesome. The one positive, I guess, of this pandemic is getting around places, because I would never go to Huntington Park if it wasn't for this, because it would take me over an hour. Amazing brisket, like as good as brisket I have in Austin. And then drove up the coast a bit just to see the water was great. And then I had Yeasty Boys bagel sandwiches. I have not had a bagel since moving out here, so it's been 4 years. Really? I just figured that, you know, it's not going to happen in L.A. Like, it's a New York thing. And these guys, they did it. And I went over to Silver Lake, got a bagel sandwich. Actually, they threw in an extra one by accident, so I had one and a half bagel sandwiches. And it was good. It was really good. I gained 2.5 pounds over the weekend. But well worth it. It was good. It was a really as good as a quarantine birthday as you could have.
Well, you've never looked better. That much is clear.
Oh, money, take off your hat, let's Eddie. Take off your hat.
You really want to see it?
Yeah. Oh yeah, I want to see it.
Take it off. I forgot. That's it. Right.
That's it.
Oh,
that's so good.
Oh, sweet Jesus.
You kept it like that. You did. That wasn't. I thought that was maybe like halfway through the cut, and then you were gonna finish it off. But no.
Money tweeted at me to go taxi driver, and I wanted to do that. And Jada was like, you lived your whole life with the full military. It was awful. I've done Mohawk twice. She's like, that's awful. So it's like, just keep it along the top. It'll be easy to grow back. Wear hats every day. So that's what I'm doing. It's, you know.
No. Please go Mohawk for us, would you? It'll delight
me. Let's do it now.
Fats Holmes, the old defensive tackle for the Steelers, he went the extra mile and he turned his Mohawk into an arrow. Do that. Do it right now. Get Jade to do it.
But also, if you can do it, because people always use the middle Mohawk, can you just bring it over to one side? Like, let's get a non-aligned Mohawk.
Maybe like the ram horn that was unveiled today. You know, it's like a curved ram horn in homage to the new uniforms.
Yeah.
I see you chuckling, Spaghetti. I don't see you calling Jada and her switchblade to come over there and fix you up.
If I do that, I may be a single man by next episode.
Come on, do it for real. And Eddie. Money brings up the uniforms not once but twice. Let's dig in on those. I do want to say, though, very quickly before I forget, I think you're right, because I think 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, Money, I expressed my skepticism that – any of these professional sports leagues obviously incented the sports fans of Sports America are chomping at the bit for anything. Give us any sports and we will watch them. And you said, I think that the leagues will be able to compel the players. Like, this is an act of patriotism on some level to go out there. And I think when I'm wrong, I say I'm wrong, like Jerry Orbach. And I think that I might be wrong about this one, because LeBron and it seems like the majority of baseball players and everybody are anxious to actually get out there. I don't know if they're going to. I feel like Major League Baseball, in the landscape as it is here, two decades into the 21st century, baseball has slipped considerably in terms of import to our society, as the NBA has gone up a little bit and other distractions, everything. This is a golden opportunity for baseball. If baseball would just get out there in about 2-3 weeks and get going, people would obsess over it. And I completely get where the players are coming from on this. I am almost always pro player on this one. I just feel like that the sport is losing out here, because they could have the full attention for the first time in a spring in forever, if they would just get out there.
And I think that goes for, I multiply it, 10 times over for golf and tennis, right? You know, we talked about that.
Oh, you're so right about that.
Golf courses are open now here in Southern California. You know, you can't practice on the range, can't take the flag stick out, you can't rake the bunker, you got to keep apart from everybody. So they figured it out. At least we hope they have, and I hope everybody stays safe and does what they're supposed to be doing out there. But I would think if they figured it out, you would assume the pros can do that as well. And they're going to starting in June. But Yeah, I'm with you. I think it's encouraging that the players, you know, are anxious to get back and understand the, you know, what sports mean to us here. We've said it on this podcast repeatedly, and hopefully that'll be the case. You know, it's interesting because you have, you know, a governor where we're doing this from that's basically said, look, we got to play this thing super, super safe and nothing's going to be open for a while. And then you go to the state right next door in Arizona and they're like, we're good. Sports starting on May 15th. Let's make it happen. So I don't know how you put all that together, how those pieces fit in the puzzle, but it'll be interesting. I think over the next, by the time we're doing this next week, I think things will have dramatically changed. We'll have,
I think you are absolutely right that I guess that the news in general, the media in general is loath to sort of get into predictions, I guess, at least, or at least that's how they perceive themselves, despite the fact that they do predictive stuff all the time anyway. But I think they don't want to wear that. But I think you're exactly right, Money. I don't know if it's a week, but yeah, it's essentially you have this side by side. I don't know who's the control group and which is the other. I forget the science lessons that I learned 40 years ago. But yeah, that's right. I mean, is Arizona going to spike? If it does, then it's like, well, see, now we got to do it the way California is. If it doesn't, then everybody's going to be like, let's go. Let's start playing ball, right? I mean, that seems like that's how simple it'll be. Handsome Hank, what do you think of what do you think about pro football? And do you assume that no, I know it's personally hurts you a little, professionally, I should say, since you do so much work around the international games, those being canceled. Do you think that there is a plan that can be conjured if, let's say, California says we're out, we can't host pro football games in 2020? Do you think that they go with centralized locations for ball games?
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's, you know, one of the contingencies that's being explored. On the international side, it made sense, right? It's hard enough to put together a schedule without, you know, in this situation, without trying to factor in quarantines for people arriving in new countries, or and certainly like playing in empty stadiums in the UK, that definitely doesn't make sense. So that was not surprising. But yeah, I would say, you know, with regards to states here, are there teams that could potentially share stadiums? Could the Chargers somehow in a world gone play in Arizona or play in Las Vegas? Like that seems
you
like
have
the kind
to
of
control,
thing that
though,
may have to be explored.
But you'd have to control legitimately. The fans in general don't care. Would be like, whatever the details, just give us football games.
Right.
But competitively, you would have to solve the home field advantage thing. No one could, you couldn't have, I mean, it would have to be, if there's no fans, then it really should
right.
be
the home
immaterial.
Field
the home level. Field, I think, is not having to travel there, right? That's the advantage right. you have is you don't have to get on a plane and do all that stuff. So if a team, let's say the Chargers ended up playing in Arizona for the sake of argument, if everyone, if that whole team therefore had to move, train, practice in Arizona, then their home field advantage is they wake up on Sunday morning and they are playing in a stadium that they drive to and the other team has had to fly into, and who knows what, you know, flying's enough of a pain for an NFL team already, and who knows what the new world will bring us with travel and whether that becomes even more complicated, even with the charter flights that teams take.
Well, hopefully come autumn, there will be pro football times too in Los Angeles and the brand new shiny stadium there. One thing I am assuming, but feel free to tell me I'm wrong about this one, any of the three of you, we know that the Chargers are going to be the better looking squad out there thanks to their powder blue getups versus what was unveiled on Wednesday this week, the new LA Rams. I'm going to start with you, Handsome, because Money, you know, is a little in the bag
got
for the Chargers,
bias.
Of course. I'm going to start with
got
you.
A little bias.
I'm going to go with you here, Hans. What do you think?
I think I have a couple of takes, and this is more like we're now at the end of uniform unveilings for 2020. A bunch of whatever, 6-7 teams change uniforms. So my take is as much about the whole process as it is about the Rams in particular. First of all, on the Rams, like the you know, they got, went back to the old colors, but they didn't really fully embrace the idea of going back to in history to the you know, what looked great in the 80s. I think they could have just done that, and I think everyone would have come away from that feeling pretty happy, and that that certainly was sort of the recipe.
What they needed to do was just make the helmet. Right, just make the helmet that color that you've made it now, so that it matches the royal blue jersey, right. And everybody would be fine. Yeah,
and you probably would have been good. Exactly. That said, you know, I don't hate those colors together. I think they're fine. I do feel like the way that these uniforms, and so just moving more broadly, two takes. Number one, the way that the uniforms look, it feels like they're kind of for superheroes or something. Like they don't look like football uniforms anymore. This may just be when they're presented as new uniforms. It looks like a sort of superhero's outfit's kind of been sprayed on. I want to see, like, it's all very well unveiling them with wide receivers and cornerbacks and safeties wearing the uniforms. When I unveil my new uniform, it's going to be with offensive linemen and defensive linemen. I want fat guys wearing the uniforms, because that's really what you see the bulk of. That's the most of the team is not like a skinny little guy. They're mostly Eddie's build. And so I want to see, like, how does this look with some curves and some bulges? And that's never, ever how they're unveiled. And that's
how great
the
would that
all
be
those
to have
uniforms.
Eddie Spaghetti walking the runway, the new model, right, for all uniforms.
That's with that new fancy haircut.
Future.
Yeah, it'll save me from ordering from Chinese wholesale sites too. I just give them the actual team.
Yeah, you get them exactly.
Old bootleg Eddie over here.
Asymmetrical mohawk there. That would be great, Spaghetti. Matt Money Smith, your thoughts?
Well, I'm not a fan. I think you hit it on the head. I thought, you know, the Rams uniforms of the 80s are in the conversation as the greatest uniforms in the NFL, in all the ages of the NFL. They're beautiful. And I think you could have just kind of updated that particular uniform and been fine. Instead, you kind of have this, well, we're in LA, so see how our numbers look like a sunset on the sand. Isn't that cool? No, it's not cool. Make them the gold that they've always been and put them on a royal blue jersey. I don't understand why they felt the need to have the numbers look kind of like a ram horn. That seems like that's going a little too far. They're incongruous with the font is not congruous with the font on the side, on the sleeve. The numbers are two different fonts. It's very weird. And the piping looks weird. It looks, it just looks like it's out of place. I don't know. I'm just not really a fan. And I had a feeling I wasn't going to be a fan after I saw the logo and they decided that was a good idea. I was like, God, this was so easy. Just update the old ones, because you've already got some of the best uniforms of all time in the NFL.
I like the gradient effect, the rainbow of the Denver Nuggets. I like the Pelicans that, the purple, green, and yellow that they wear. I like the Steelers Bumblebees. I like those. I like the kind of broad striping like that. The gradient on the numbers, though, is unappealing. Maybe it's the pallor of yellow that it is. It doesn't work, whatever it is. And then the road uniforms that got stuck in the wash with the pair of new black socks. What is the for? What is the thing of like, they're not white. Are they gray? No, they're just dingy. You know,
why? That looks like a kid's AYSO soccer team where one mother was sent home with all the jerseys and they were white. And then there was an accident. And they have to persuade the kids that actually this was the intention all along.
It's also a little bit like we're talking about with Neil Peart, or that I was trying to make the point about Neil Peart. Okay, the nuance of how technically sound he is, great, but it's the same thing. Like, well, now, so you have to learn why. If you look at the numbers, why they have that little darker thread in them, because that's an homage to Los Angeles. I don't care. What?
Just
does it move me or not? What the hell do I care about what the backstory is? Yeah, I can't see it on my TV. I don't care unless I'm wearing it. It's weird and it misses the mark for me. Maybe they sell more as a result. Maybe that's the goal. But just to my eye watching it, it's how it pairs with whoever they're on the field with. It reminds me very much, it's like the overly elaborate, uniforms like that are a distraction and they don't jibe with whoever they're playing against in the same way that the ubiquitous pizza box that you get with the one guy who looks like a heavy set Italian guy with a mustache in the foreground. He's kind of paunchy and he's delivering a pizza. But then the guy working the stove right behind him is a cartoon character who kind of looks like Beaker from the Muppets. It's like, what the hell are those two guys doing in the same kitchen? Same thing. Whoever the Rams play, it's going to be like the same thing as watching the Jags in those weird melted Rolo candy hats that they were wearing. It's the same thing. It's like, why? How did those two wind up on the same field? They don't look right together. You see, that's the favor you do with a good uniform for whoever you're playing.
The one thing we have to wait for, and hopefully we, to your point earlier, Dave, we will get to see it this fall, is in a new stadium, like part of the attraction, like the 49ers in Candlestick Park, it was always about how the sun hit the field. And it was the same at the Coliseum as well, how the sun hits the field with those uniforms, like that, the mix of that on TV. We'll have to see in Inglewood, you know, what's the light like? How do those uniforms look in that light? Because that's going to be key to this whole thing. That's where you're going to see them the most.
Well, actually, you see them walking around LA the most, you know, at least that's what they hope. It's like just a person wearing not the, you know, elastic on the sides, you know, sort of tank top, sort of muscle shirt. No, you're going to see the replicas with the stripes on the side and the weird font numbers on the side. Curves. Yeah. So it's like, I don't know. I don't think I would have been so well, actually, I probably would have still found them not to be that attractive, but just the way they rolled out that logo with the Fibonacci sequence and the years of research and this is what went into it. Oh, whatever. You said it, Dave. Like, just the logo's terrible. The LA logo is just awful. So maybe because the uniforms aren't as bad as that logo, like everything since then has been a little bit better. I don't mind the helmet, but I think you hit it on the head. Like, why is the helmet this crazy metallic when it's not really going to match the uniform now? It's just, I don't.
It's, so can we rank the seven teams that changed? Can we just quickly walk through that?
Win, play, show. Let's do individual, not set. Let's do single uniform. Hmm. I will start it by going, and it's a close one. It's the all white Chargers get-ups, followed very closely by the powder blue with the white pants of the Chargers. Those are my one and two. That's win and place. And then I guess, unless I'm forgetting, oh, you know what? I'd go Browns. Their return to their classic. I like the home brown always more than the all white. So I'll make that my show out of my one, two, three there.
I think my win, if we're doing individual ones, then my win play show are all Chargers uniforms. Mine is the Chargers blue with the yellow pants as the win. The blue and white as the show, and sorry, as the place, and then the Chargers royal blue as the show. But if we're going
by team,
Chargers are one. I'd agree. I think Browns are probably two. I don't know. I think the Colts didn't really do very much.
I think more interesting is what's the worst. Is it the Patriots? Is it the Falcons? Is it the Rams? I think those are probably the bottom three, right? I would assume that the Bucks are in the middle there with the, you know, I think the Browns, like you said, are up there with the Chargers. But I feel like, who am I missing?
I think the Bucks, the Colts made some. Oh, the Colts. I'm not even sure that should be included. I think the Falcons are probably the losers on this one, unless they just look at what everyone has said and say, you know what, that one throwback uniform that we included in there, let's just wear that all the time.
Yeah, but it's a little bit like you get held to a higher standard. You're a victim of your past success. It's Shaq getting swept by Akeem. It looms larger. That is in my mind, Matt Money Smith, that the 95 Orlando Magic. I have to take a quick detour because I want to wrap it up here. But I have to say quickly about The Last Dance.
The same Orlando Magic team that got swept in 96.
That's right. Well, without
the Bulls,
first of all,
swept
in 95, not only am I more resolute than ever that Akeem and company would have beaten the Bulls, the Orlando Magic. Talk about the things that broke just right in Michael Jordan's professional basketball career, that he retires just when, and they played stiff competition in all six of those title rounds. The worst matchup for them would have still been the Houston Rockets. Another terrible matchup for them was the 95 Orlando Magic. And this jive, talk about like how history just allows people, some people get away with everything, other people, everything gets poured over. Michael Jordan, this thing of like, well, I wasn't in basketball shape. So what does that mean? You weren't out drinking in bars for a year and a half. You were playing professional sports, man. You were playing baseball. That's better than, by comparison, Ted Williams flying missions, goodness knows where, totally, or Mario Lemieux being.
Totally,
this thing about like, well, I wasn't in basketball shape. You played before you got to that series against the Magic. The reason the Bulls lost, the premise of the argument is at this point, and always has been, is, oh, well, yeah. Well, what were they supposed to do? Jordan wasn't in basketball shape. Yeah. He played 20 games.
It's baseball.
He got 20 games. Now he played a quarter of an NBA season before the Magic showed up.
You're running up and down a basketball court, Dave, for 42 minutes. It's totally different. Oh, baseball, he's working on his swing. You're running sprints for 90 feet at a time. There's no cardiovascular in baseball. You don't have to kind of be in a perpetual state of motion in the outfield. The guy was working on a swing.
If he came out of
that's what his number one goal was.
If he came out of retirement on a Thursday and hit the court on a Saturday, that would be a viable excuse. He played for 2 months before the match.
No, he did not play for 2 months. He played for a month. He played for 1 month before the playoffs started. 1 month. He gets to get back. It's not like he's, and by the way, he's not walking onto a local YMCA court. He's going into the NBA against the greatest players on earth. It's not
all
like.
Right, well, is he the greatest or not? I mean, like Bo Jackson went from baseball into pro football. What's a more rugged transition? Mario Lemieux got off the chemo table and went out and played hockey. And they, all three of those examples, all thrived. What's Jordan's? And by the way, Jordan was great that year too. A little less great than he typically was, but he was great. The reason they lost, he had a few good games.
He had a few good of his. I don't know what he had. If you go back and look through the game logs, you'll see that of the 17 games he played, there's maybe 3 to 5 that he was really, really good. Otherwise, he was inefficient.
Well, guess what? Motivated Horace Grant and Shaq Fu were too much for Michael Jordan in basketball shape and the other guys he was out there with. There was no Dennis Rodman. And in 96, to answer your question, by the way, Nick Anderson gets hurt. Horace Grant gets hurt in the first game. So that eliminates an advantage that they might have had. And that you add Dennis Rodman to the Bulls. Well, of course, then that explains the difference.
So what team is playing in 95? That's what I'm trying to figure out. Like, because if Mike, because your premise is Michael never retires, he loses to the Rockets. So, but what's the team? I mean, it's not like the team is different. It'll look different. It's Michael playing with Tony Kukoc for an entire season. It's, you know, him being able to share his wisdom, impart his, you know, competitiveness into this guy who was such a crafty and brilliant offensive player in Europe, but didn't quite kind of figure out the NBA. Yeah. I think there's so many, that's why it's so hard to play those hypotheticals, you know, and remember, like here's my biggest issue also, real quick though, Dave, like my Bill biggest Cartwright, issue with your Bill hypothetical Cartwright. Is
by
the Rockets
wait,
were Bill never Cartwright. Dominant. They were never a dominant team. They never ran roughshod over the West. You know, that 95 year, what were they? The sixth seed? You're telling me right now that a team that was a sixth seed over the course of an 82 game season was somehow going to be the juggernaut that knocked off Jordan? No, come on.
Yes, that happens in NBA and hockey. That happens a fair amount.
Hockey's different. Hockey's a hot goalie. That's why an eight seed can win. You know that.
I'm just saying that. I don't know if that were they really a six seed? I know that they fell off considerably after the title. But then again, that can be explained away by the transition from Otis Thorpe to Clyde Drexler, that maybe they dipped a bit there. I will have to pour over that. Anyway, I think, again, the Orlando Magic, the retirement sets up and benefits Jordan so much And it's kind of weird because the whole thing about the Uber competitor, he's the ultimate
competitor. They finished competitor. Third in their division, Dave. Third in their division at 47 and 35.
That's my pushback on that would be is look at the Titanic teams that were in the West at that point too. Chaz Barkley, Suns. Here come the Sonics. I mean, the West has been forever.
They got pushed to 5 games in the first round. They won 3-2 over the Jazz. They got pushed to 7 games in the second round. They won 4-3 over the Suns, and then they got pushed to 6 games. They weren't dominant.
Matchup makes the fight. And that would be a terrible matchup for Akeem. That's the matchup.
Great.
And you know who agrees with me, apparently? Bob Horry. Bob Horry thinks that
who would have guessed?
I think Horace Grant also feels that that's the case. Anyway, listen. Delightful conversation is always there. Spaghetti, you know I'm right. You can just nod, right?
I think after watching it, I realized how great the Bulls teams really are, because you always said those teams the Bulls played weren't that good, but like the Barkley Suns, the Sonics were awesome. There are a lot of really good West teams.
I never said that. I said the Suns were good.
I thought your whole thing
was... I said if Paxton misses that shot in 6, the Suns win in game 7.
Oh, God. That's what I said.
All right, my mistake. I thought that was one of your takes. I don't know.
For a guy that spent some of his formative years and some of the most happy years of his life in Chicago, you really do like to crap all over their sports teams regularly.
No, I do not.
Yes, you do. Yes, you do. Your little hypothetical for the Bears. Your hypothetical for the Bulls. Like, everything is just one giant crap fest all over that city.
It is. I don't think there's a more significant.
And let me tell you what would have happened if the Dolphins would have knocked off the Patriots. If Jordan would have never retired, Hakeem would have ate his sixth seed Rockets that were pushed to an elimination game in each of their first two series. They would have ate the greatest player in team sports history for lunch.
Michael Jordan. Two, three.
Oh, man.
I'm Matt Money Smith, and Walter Payton is the – listen.
He is.
That's exactly right. I rejoiced with all of Chicago on the north side when Paxton hit his shot and Steve Kerr hit his and so on.
You just said if he didn't
–
If he wouldn't have lost in 7. If he didn't hit that shot,
I also say the Steelers would have lost to the Chargers had they survived the Oilers in 79.
Don't give us the one little scrap that permits you to give us all the other crap. That's all that is. It's like, you know what? I'm gonna put this out there just so I can say everything else and get away with it.
That's my those count as my bona fides, and handsome knows. There's no bigger result in pro football history in a single game that alters our perception of things than the 85 AFC title game in the rainy Orange Bowl. If Marino wins that one, he goes to the Superdome. He beats the greatest defense, the single season defense, this side of the steel curtain of the 20th century. And he is held up by the time that Y2K arrives. Dan Marino is unquestioned as the greatest quarterback in pro football history. But that's not the way it went. And Michael Jordan is considered the best basketball player of all time. Is he a jerk? That's a conversation for another time.
Seems like
it. Is it necessary to be a jerk to be successful?
I don't think
Another question for another time. What? You don't have to be a jerk?
I don't think so. I mean, I think you have to be a little cutthroat, right, to get all the way to the top. But I don't know if you got to be a jerk where someone hands you, you know, your thing and you're like, Gary Payton. It's like, yeah, easy, Mike. He got you in that fifth game. Were you ever in danger of losing the series? No, but he played you pretty damn well and he had a pretty damn good game. At least you can acknowledge that. It's not that big of a deal.
Punching 6'2", scrawny Steve Kerr. That's a Jerry Krause. What a tough guy. What a bully if there ever was one. Funny. Did you ever take a swing at Horace Grant there, Mike? Did you ever reprimand him?
Yeah, Charles Oakley.
Go ahead. Take your shot there, Tuffy. All right, listen. A gay conversation as always. handsome. I see Ronnie looming in the background. Please.
Yeah, there's some kind of chaos happening in the background here.
Well, let Ronnie know I'm happy that he's got a number one. You've purchased him a number one in Aqua.
He actually has asked for a number one jersey. He's going to have to earn that with some better behavior around the home.
Tough house. He doesn't get the logo on the side of the helmet until he earns it.
No, exactly. Right. You got to earn it.
That was like a Hugh Jackson thing, so you may want to reconsider that. You guys are not going to get the stripes on your helmet. I have taken them off. Thanks, Hugh. Thanks so much. Yeah. Great.
All right, so for Handsome Hank and for Matt Money Smith and for
Dave Damish,
good times, fellas, as always. Yeah, stay safe, and we'll kibitz sooner rather than later. So for Handsome Hank, Matt Money Smith, make sure iHeartRadio, you're checking them out. He and Petros are taking the time to knock out shows every day for you. The least you can do is tune into those. And for Eddie Spaghetti, soon to be Mohawk. Thanks so much, football fans. We'll talk to you soon. It's been a thin slice of heaven.